Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going deep into the world of artificial intelligence in government, or AIGOV for short. You've given us a ton of information to go through, academic papers, government reports, we even have real-world examples. It really feels like we're getting a glimpse into the future of how governments work.
Yeah, it is fascinating to see how AI is already changing things. What we're trying to do today is understand how governments around the world are using it, what challenges they're running into, and of course, what it all means for you as a citizen.
I'll admit, I was a little surprised to see how much AI is already being used in government. One example that caught my eye was how the Spanish government is using IBM's Watson to answer questions about taxes.
That's a perfect example of how AI can be used to solve everyday problems. Imagine being able to get your tax questions answered quickly and efficiently by a computer. That's exactly what's happening in Spain. By automating responses to common questions, the Spanish government has seen a huge drop in email inquiries, like an 80% drop.
Wow, 80%! That's an incredible improvement. So it's clear that AI is already making a difference. But before we get into the specifics, let's step back for a moment and start with the basics. What exactly do we mean when we talk about AI in government?
AI in government is really about using technology to do things that normally require human intelligence. Think decision-making, analyzing data, and evaluating complex situations.
So it's not about replacing humans, but more about helping them do their jobs better.
Exactly. It's about working smarter, not harder. Now, in addition to Spain's tax system, our sources highlighted a couple other really interesting use cases.
Yeah.
For example, the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, they're using AI to predict the location of these things called heat islands.
Heat islands.
Yeah, heat islands. So these are urban areas that get a lot hotter than the areas around them because of things like buildings and pavement. It's a big problem, especially during heat waves.
That's fascinating. So they're just tracking these heat islands, or are they actually doing something with that information?
They're actually using this information to take action. Like, they're coming up with solutions to reduce the negative health effects of heat in those areas. It's a perfect example of AI being used to improve public health, and we see similar things in other countries, too.
Like where?
Well, we talked about Spain, but Italy's National Social Security Institute, or INPS, they're using AI to automatically classify and sort certified emails. It saves a ton of time and resources.
So far, it sounds like AI is a dream come true for making government more efficient. But I imagine actually implementing these AI solutions isn't as simple as just flipping a switch, right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. There's a lot more to it than that. One of our sources outlines a five-step framework for governments to follow.
Five steps. Okay, that sounds manageable. What's the first step?
So step one is really about taking stock. It's about profiling the core functions of the agency, listing out all the critical tasks, you know, all the things they do every day, and then pinpointing the areas that could be improved. Think of it like this. Imagine you're a registry of motor vehicles. You might realize that the way you conduct driving permit exams could be a lot more efficient and accurate if you used AI.
So step one is all about understanding what you're doing now and figuring out where AI could make things better.
Yeah, exactly. And then step two is where you zoom in on those areas you've identified that are most critical to, well, to both performance and customer satisfaction. These are flagged as reds to show their importance. It's about focusing on the places where AI can make the biggest difference.
Okay, so now we've identified the problem areas and we've highlighted the most critical ones. What comes next?
Step three is where things get exciting. You start exploring different AI applications that could be used to address those critical red areas. Now, one really important insight from our sources is that often it's more efficient to be what they call a fast follower, adopting existing AI solutions rather than trying to be on the bleeding edge of AI development.
Yeah, it makes sense. Why reinvent the wheel, right?
Yeah.
So let's say we have a list of potential solutions. Now what? What's the next step?
Step four is all about doing your homework, really doing your research. It's about evaluating each potential solution. And there's a whole bunch of things to consider, like, you know, expertise, cost, the time it'll take to implement, how customizable it is, maintenance needs, data protection, and even intellectual property considerations. It's like, you know, thinking about the practicalities of actually putting these solutions in place.
So it's kind of like shopping for a new car. You have your list of models, and now you're comparing all the features, the prices, and of course, reliability. But with AI, the stakes are a lot higher.
You got it. And remember, these are complex systems. So you want to make quantitative assessments whenever possible. You know, look at the numbers. But it's also really important to acknowledge that qualitative factors matter too. It's not always just about the data. Sometimes it's about things that are harder to measure.
Okay, so we've thoroughly vetted our options. What happens in step five?
Well, in step five, you put it all together. You take all your assessments from step four, and you prioritize your AI solutions, creating a roadmap for the agency's AI strategy. It's about making sure that each AI application you choose fits into the organization's overall goals and systems. You don't want to just implement AI in isolation.
It's like AI needs to be part of the bigger picture, right?
Exactly. And the sources actually give a really good example of this framework in action. They talk about how a court system used these five steps, and they decided that AI could be most beneficial in managing their workforce, translation services, and courtroom scheduling. So it's not just theoretical, it's actually being used.
That's a good illustration. Up to this point, we've really been focusing on all the positive things about AI. But are there any potential drawbacks, any challenges that we should be aware of?
Oh, that is a really great point. You know, while AI definitely has a lot of potential to make government more efficient and improve services, there are some considerations to keep in mind.
Like what? What kinds of things?
Well, there are examples like Togo's social protection program. They use satellite imagery and AI algorithms to distribute financial aid during the pandemic, which was a really successful initiative. But it also brings up questions about data privacy and the possibility of this technology being misused. Governments are definitely aware of these challenges.
So how are they trying to ensure that AI is used responsibly?
Well, one important effort is through regulations and guidelines. For example, the UN's recommendation on the ethics of artificial intelligence, adopted by all 193 member states in 2023. This is a big step towards setting global ethical standards for AI technologies.
So there's a global effort to promote responsible AI development.
Right. And another example is the European Union's AI Act. It was adopted in 2024. This regulation focuses on things like risk assessment, data quality, human oversight, and making sure AI systems are robust. It's especially focused on what they call high-risk systems, things used in critical infrastructure, education, law enforcement, migration, you name it.
Sounds like the EU is trying to get ahead of any potential problems. Are there any other examples of these kinds of initiatives?
Yeah, actually, a lot of countries are creating their own guidelines for how government agencies should buy and use AI. They're adding requirements for accountability and transparency. It's all about making sure AI is used ethically and responsibly.
It's encouraging to see all these efforts to promote responsible AI development, but it seems like focusing just on the technology itself isn't enough. What about the human side of things?
You're absolutely right. It's not enough just to define what AI is. We also need to focus on how these AI systems interact with the environment they're in, how they interact with people. And that means shifting to a human-centered approach to design and implementation. We need to prioritize reliability, safety, and trustworthiness. And those are all things that are important to people.
Okay, that makes sense. But what does that actually look like in practice? How do we make sure AI systems are designed with people in mind?
That's a great question, and it's something we're going to be digging into in the next part of our deep dive. We'll talk about how to implement this human-centered approach and what it means for the future of government. But before we do that, I'm curious what's really stood out to you so far. What surprised you? What are you most curious about?
Honestly, I think what surprised me most is just the sheer variety of ways AI is already being used in government. From answering tax questions to predicting heat islands, it's clear that AI is having a real impact on our lives, even if we don't always see it.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing to see how AI is being used to solve so many different problems and to improve public services. And we've really only scratched the surface of what's possible. As AI continues to evolve, I think we can expect to see even more creative and impactful applications in the coming years.
And that's a great point. It feels like the perfect place to wrap up this first part of our deep dive. We've covered a lot today, from defining AI and its characteristics to exploring this five-step framework for implementing AI solutions. We also talked about this global push for responsible AI development. But there's still so much more to explore, especially when it comes to that human element and its impact on society as a whole.
We'll be back with part two, where we'll delve deeper into this idea of human-centered AI design and discuss what it takes to ensure that these powerful technologies are used ethically and effectively to benefit all citizens. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Before the break, we were talking about how important a human-centered approach to AI is, especially in government. But I'm still kind of trying to figure out what that looks like in practice. You know, how do we actually design and implement AI systems in a way that puts humans first?
That's a great question. And you know what? It highlights something really important. Developing these human-centered AI systems isn't just about the technology itself. We have to think about it from different perspectives, bring in expertise from a bunch of different fields. I'm talking about things like public administration, political science, policy studies, but also computer science, ethics, even culture and law.
So it's not just about the coders and the algorithms. We need to think about the bigger picture, the social impact, the human impact of these systems.
Exactly. We need to understand how AI is going to interact with real people, with real communities. And one of our sources actually proposes a really interesting framework to help us do this. They suggest that this framework can be used by governments to make sure they're focusing on the right ideas, the right principles, the right values when they're developing and using AI.
Okay, now I'm really interested. Tell me more about this framework. What does it look like?
So this framework has three main dimensions: operational fitness, epistemic completeness, and normative salience.
Three dimensions. That sounds pretty thorough. Let's break it down. What exactly is operational fitness in this context?
Well, operational fitness is all about making sure the AI system actually works the way it's supposed to work in the real world. You know, does it achieve what it's supposed to achieve effectively? Is it safe? Is it reliable? And is it user-friendly? It's about making sure it's fit for its intended purpose, not just a shiny new piece of tech.
Yeah, that makes sense. So are there any specific criteria to look at to figure out if a system is fit? How do we know it's truly operationally fit?
There are actually standards and tools that governments can use. For example, there are standards from the International Organization for Standardization, ISO. They help assess things like how well the machine learning is performing and whether there's any bias in the system. There's also the AI governance testing framework and toolkit that was developed by Singapore.
So there are benchmarks to help evaluate these complex systems, but operational fitness isn't just a one-time thing, is it? It's not like you just check it off the list and you're done.
You're right. It's definitely an ongoing process. You need to keep monitoring and evaluating AI systems to make sure they're still working the way they should. You know, things change, the world changes, so we have to make sure these systems stay on track and keep meeting their objectives. It's about constantly trying to improve, not just getting it right once and then forgetting about it.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so we've talked about operational fitness. Let's move on to the second dimension, epistemic completeness. What does that even mean?
Well, epistemic completeness is all about transparency. It's about making sure we can actually understand how the AI system works, what data it's using, and how it reaches its decisions. No more black boxes where we just have to trust the system blindly.
Oh, so it's kind of like lifting the hood and showing how the engine works. That makes sense. I mean, especially when we're relying on AI to make more and more decisions that affect our lives, right?
Right. We have to be able to trust these systems. And there are initiatives that are focused on promoting transparency. For example, there are these things called model cards that provide a bunch of information about how different AI models work. There are also surveys that are being used to try and gauge the public's understanding of AI. Like in the UK, there's the Public Attitudes to Data and AI Tracker Survey.
So there's a lot of work being done to make sure that AI is something that people can understand, which seems really important when you think about how powerful it is. Okay, we've got operational fitness, epistemic completeness. What about that third dimension, normative salience?
Normative salience is all about making sure that AI aligns with our values, our ethics, our legal standards. We want to make sure that it's not just functional, that it's not just transparent, but that it's also morally sound.
That's huge. I mean, we talked before about some of the potential pitfalls of AI, right? How do we make sure that AI is being used ethically?
It really comes down to actively thinking about how it could be misused and then figuring out how to prevent that from happening. There are frameworks being developed to help with this. For example, New Zealand has something called the Algorithm Charter for Aotearoa New Zealand, which provides guidelines for ethical AI implementation. Canada has its Algorithmic Impact Assessment Tool. And then there's this ISO standard, the one on the governance implications of AI, which gives a broader framework for addressing ethical concerns.
So it sounds like there are a lot of resources out there that can help governments use AI in an ethical and responsible way. But, you know, ethics isn't exactly a set in stone thing, is it? What happens when our values change?
That's a great point. Normative salience isn't something you do once and then forget about it. It has to be constantly reevaluated. As ethical standards change, as our values as a society evolve, we have to adapt these systems. It's an ongoing process of reflection and adjustment.
So even if we implement an AI system today and it seems ethical, we can't just assume it's always going to be okay. We have to keep checking in, making sure it's still serving us the way it should be.
Exactly. And when you consider all three of these dimensions, it shows you just how complex this whole thing really is. Human-centered AI design requires careful planning, a lot of collaboration, and constant evaluation.
It's definitely not something that happens overnight.
It's a journey. But if we get it right, the potential benefits are huge, both for government and society. Imagine a world where AI makes government more efficient, more equitable, more responsive to people's needs.
That does sound like a world I'd like to live in. You know, I want to shift gears for a moment and talk about a specific type of AI that's been getting a lot of attention lately. Generative AI. We touched on ChatGPT Gov earlier, but I'd love to get a better understanding of what generative AI is and how it's being used or could be used in government.
Sure. Generative AI is all about AI systems that can create new content. Think text, images, audio, even computer code. It's a rapidly evolving field with a ton of potential in government.
Can you give us some specific examples of how it's being used or could be used?
One really promising area is in citizen communication. Imagine getting a letter from a government agency that's actually tailored to your specific situation, written in plain language that's easy to understand. That's something generative AI could do.
That would be so much better than those generic letters we usually get, the ones full of jargon that nobody understands. It could really help close that communication gap between government and the people.
Exactly. And another area is in policy analysis. Generative AI can look at massive data sets and generate really useful insights that can be used to inform policy decisions. For instance, it could be used to analyze public sentiment on a particular issue, figure out potential risks and opportunities associated with a policy, or even predict the impact of different policy choices.
Wow, it's like having an AI policy advisor. But as with any powerful tool, there have to be some downsides, right? What are some of the potential risks or challenges of using generative AI in government?
One big concern is the potential for misuse, especially when it comes to misinformation. You know, we've already seen the problems with deepfakes, where videos are manipulated to make it look like someone's saying or doing something they never did. Well, generative AI could make it even easier to create and spread these convincing fakes.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. It could erode trust in information and make it really hard to know what's true and what's not.
Exactly. And another concern is bias. If the AI system is trained on biased data, it's going to create biased content that could perpetuate inequalities that already exist.
So we have to be really careful about the data that's used to train these systems, right? We need to make sure it's diverse and representative.
Absolutely. Human oversight is crucial. We can't just let these systems run wild. We have to keep an eye on them, make sure that the content they're generating is accurate, ethical, and appropriate.
So it's about finding that balance, right? Harnessing the power of generative AI while also putting safeguards in place to minimize the risks. It seems like it's definitely possible if we approach it the right way.
You got it. Generative AI has the potential to revolutionize government, but we have to be responsible about it. We have to commit to developing and using it ethically.
Speaking of responsibility, we talked before about the need for AI education and skills development, you know, making sure that people who work in government and citizens in general are prepared for this AI-powered world. But what kind of skills are we talking about? What should we be focusing on?
That's a really important question. One of the most critical skills is data literacy. Understanding how data works, being able to collect it, analyze it, and interpret it. These are skills that are going to be essential as AI relies more and more on data.
So it's not just about being able to use computers, it's about understanding how data works.
Yes, sure.
And knowing how to use it responsibly.
Yes, exactly. And critical thinking is another key skill. AI can help us in so many ways, but we can't just take everything it tells us at face value. We have to be able to think for ourselves, evaluate the information we're given, and make informed decisions.
So we have to be able to think critically, even when we're using tools that seem like they're doing the thinking for us.
Exactly. And we can't forget about creativity and problem solving. You know, as AI takes over more of the routine tasks, it's going to free us up to focus on higher level things that require those uniquely human skills.
It sounds like the future of work is going to be all about humans and AI working together, each contributing their own strengths. That's a lot more hopeful than the idea of AI taking over everything.
I agree. And to make sure we have that positive future, international cooperation is going to be really important.
Why is international cooperation so important when we're talking about AI?
Well, AI is a global technology.
Mm-hmm.
It has the potential to affect everyone everywhere. And no single country can solve all the challenges or realize all the opportunities of AI on its own. We have to work together.
So it's about making sure that AI is developed and used in a way that benefits all of humanity, not just a few countries.
Exactly. And there are already some really good examples of international collaboration, like the OECD AI principles. They set out a framework for responsible AI development and use that's been adopted by lots of countries around the world.
That's good to hear. It sounds like there's at least some global agreement on how to approach AI ethically. What are some other examples of countries working together on this?
Well, the United Nations, for instance, they've launched a whole bunch of initiatives that are focused on using AI to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals. So there's definitely a growing understanding that AI can be a really powerful tool for tackling some of the world's biggest problems, but it's going to take a coordinated effort to make sure that it's used responsibly and effectively.
This has been such a fascinating look at AI in government, especially when we consider the human element. But before we move on to the last part of our deep dive, I'm curious what stood out to you as the most important takeaway from this part of our conversation.
You know, for me, it's this idea that keeps coming up again and again. AI is a tool, and like any tool, it can be used for good or for bad. The choices we make now about how we develop and use these systems are going to have a massive impact on the world in the future. It's really up to all of us, citizens, policymakers, technologists, ethicists, to work together and make sure AI is used to build a better future for everyone.
I think that's a great point to end this part of the conversation on. We've talked about so much, from human-centered design to generative AI and the importance of global cooperation. But the main takeaway is clear. We can't just sit back and let AI happen. We have to be involved in shaping how it's developed and used, making sure it's serving us, not the other way around.
Exactly. In the last part of our deep dive, we'll share some final thoughts and insights on how you, as a citizen, can actually get involved in shaping the future of AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We spent the last two parts of this episode really diving into the world of AI in government, from how it's being used right now to those, you know, complex frameworks. And of course, we talked about human-centered design. We've covered so much.
It's true. We've also talked about generative AI and responsible development and, you know, that whole idea of international collaboration. It really has been a journey.
It really has. So as we wrap up our deep dive here, I want to step back for a minute and think about the big picture. What are some of the key things we've learned, and what does it all mean, you know, for the future of government and for the future of society as a whole?
You know, one thing that really struck me is just the sheer potential of AI to completely change how we think about government. And I'm not just talking about automating a few tasks here and there or making things a little bit more efficient. This is about using technology to fundamentally change how government works and how it serves the people.
It's about creating a government that's more responsive, more effective, more equitable. A government that actually works for everyone.
Exactly. But we also have to remember that AI is a tool. And like any tool, it can be used for good or for bad. We have to be aware of both the benefits and the risks.
Which is where human-centered design comes in, right? Right. We can't just throw AI at every problem without thinking about the ethical implications. What kind of impact is this going to have on society?
You got it. A human-centered approach means making sure that AI is designed and used in a way that aligns with our values. It should serve the needs of people, not the other way around. And this brings us to another really important point, education.
Yeah, we've talked about how important it is to make sure people who work in government, and really all citizens, have the knowledge and skills they need to navigate this world that's becoming increasingly AI-driven. But what does that actually look like? How do we make that happen?
It's about creating a culture where learning is ongoing. It's about things like data literacy, critical thinking, creativity, problem solving. These are all skills that are going to be so important going forward. We need to be able to understand data, to question information, and to be able to adapt to new challenges as AI changes the world around us.
So it's not just about understanding how AI works. It's about being able to use it in a way that benefits everyone, in a way that's ethical.
Yes, absolutely. It's about empowering people, giving them the tools they need to be a part of shaping the future of AI, not just letting it happen to them. And this brings me to something else that's really important, communication.
You're talking about having these open, honest conversations about what role we want AI to play, both in government and in society more broadly, right?
Yeah. We need to have citizens, policymakers, tech experts, ethicists, everyone involved in this conversation. The decisions we make now about AI are going to have huge consequences down the road, so we need to make sure those decisions are made together.
It's not just about the technology. It's about making informed choices as a society about how we want to use it.
Right. We need to be proactive, not just react to whatever happens.
Well, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought. Exploring AI and its role in government has really shown us how fast this technology is moving. And honestly, it feels like we're just getting started. AI is going to continue to have a huge impact on our lives, so it's up to all of us to pay attention, ask questions, and be a part of the conversation.
You said it. The choices we make now will determine what that impact looks like.
Yep.
So stay informed, stay engaged, and keep asking those questions.
That's a great message to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the world of AI and government. We hope you found it informative and maybe even a little bit inspiring. Until next time, keep exploring.
Goodbye.